We probably spend about 140 hours in our regular audit of the city of Kirkland, and you know, that's not an unusual amount of time, and in that period of time we're pretty efficient with our work. We're able to look at quite a bit, and Kirkland is one of those examples where they try to look out a little farther ahead and anticipate what the problems might be, what the restrictions might be coming down the road, and not just respond to each crisis, but actually look ahead a little bit, be proactive. And in that way, I think they've kind of set themselves apart from many other local governments.
One of the measures Kirkland uses to ensure financial foresight is analysis by the Government Finance Officers Association. This is voluntary. In fact, only 3,800 governments throughout the United States subject their financial reports to the finance officers' scrutiny. That's less than 4%. The reason is simple. To win the finance officers' approval, a government must show excellence through dozens of criteria, all intended to demonstrate one obligation: transparency.
The GFOA awards are a lot of extra effort on our part, but they're worth it because they give us standards by which to judge our performance. It's definitely an extra step, and it requires a higher commitment on our part.
And yet, Kirkland participates year after year. And year after year, the Government Finance Officers Association honors our city for its excellence in financial reporting.
I think it goes right back to our values as a city. We aren't an average city, and we don't want to be an average city. We want to be one of the nation's best local governments. To do that, though, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Kirkland's budget and financial statements are really just the city's value statement, only in numbers. It expresses the city's priorities, which should align with your priorities. And if they don't, you should speak up. You can do this most directly by participating in Kirkland's biennial budget process. You can participate in online surveys and in public forums, such as neighborhood meetings and city council meetings. It doesn't matter how you participate, just as long as you do. For more information, visit kirklandwa.gov.
Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast. Mm-hmm. Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Thank you.
Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast. Weather is next. Your current conditions.
Good evening. Thank you very much for attending tonight. I'm impressed to see so many people turn out on what turned out to be a very beautiful evening. Tonight we will be honored with hearing from a very renowned speaker on issues of pedestrian and bicycle mobility, Mr. Dan Burden. And he'll be out here in a moment, but I want to give a brief introduction. First of all, this is part of a series of lectures that the city of Kirkland has been putting on for some time and hopes to continue on issues surrounding livability in our community. We're also honored to have sponsored this event jointly with the city of Redmond. And in fact, over the last day, today, and then again tomorrow, Dan is spending time going through both Redmond and Kirkland, looking around, and will be presenting ideas, his observations, to the staffs of those cities. And then tomorrow night in a joint city council meeting between the Redmond and Kirkland City Councils, and that'll be over in the City of Redmond Council Chambers, and you're welcome to attend that and hear what he has to say. I believe that's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Mr. Burden is a director of Walkable Communities, Inc., a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to doing, I think, just what he's doing tonight, which is really getting the word out about how to make communities more walkable and bicycle friendly. He's been involved in transportation issues for over 25 years. He was on the staff of the Florida Department of Transportation, and for many of those years, he was the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator. He's traveled extensively around the country and around the world on issues such as this. He was a consultant, actually, to the United Nations for bicycling safety in China and Australia. He's also a photographer. And has had his photos appearing in the New York Times, National Geographic, Better Homes and Gardens, Sierra Club calendars, and the Weekly Reader. He's also an active bicyclist himself, and I was amazed to learn that he led a two-year National Geographic bicycle expedition from Alaska to Argentina, among other tours, and that's quite a trek. So without further ado, let me introduce Mr. Dan Burden.
All right. Good evening, Kirkland, Bellevue, Redmond, and the rest of the Pacific Northwest, right? Is that right? We have lots of folks here. This is a very special occasion for me to come to a part of America that is doing the most to reinvent our towns, villages, and cities and make them into places once again for people. As I've traveled during the last 3 years, this is now the 634th community I've been to in as little as 3 years. I have found that all of America seems to be waking up in common. We are realizing that we were asleep at the switch for well over 50 years, that it's now time to start to design our cities for ourselves and not for our cars. And only in doing that will we ever come to a solution in our personal mobility and, in fact, of even being able to keep our cars out of a long queue. So I'm going to share with you the secrets that are being discovered, but again remind you that it's here in the Pacific Northwest, but especially not only in the highly urban portions of the well-developed Seattles and Portlands, but in the new emerging Kirklands, Redmonds, Bellevues, and other neighborhoods and towns where we're beginning to see how we put all of these little pieces together and make a lot of sense out of a good place to live. With that, let's go ahead and get the house lights, and we'll go to first set of images. As a former photographer for National Geographic, I take a lot of interest and pride and coming up with images that help to relate the important message that we're now all working on together and collectively. Can this light come down a little bit? Can we do that? If you can work on that. I'd like to share with you, first of all, a signature image, one that has come to symbolize what I think all towns are trying to do, and that's bring back the people. This is one of my favorite towns of all place in North America, Vancouver Island, British Columbia, Victoria in particular. What I look for when I come to your community is what I see here. I'm looking for people, and I'm looking for lots of people. The more people I see, the better we are. I'm also looking for a number early in the day, late in the evening. I'm looking for a balance of folks, a rich diversity. I'm looking for children in the downtown. I'm looking for seniors, people who have disabilities. When I find those images, I also find happiness, that people are relaxed. You can tell by their body language as they patrol the streets in search of a minor adventure, a chance to be encountered by others, to meet other folks. And when I see that the edges of the street are alive and robust with people, then all I need to do is look to the middle of the street and find out it's not jammed or packed with cars. That if we go back to the reason we created cities, that we really want to get out, we want to shop, we want to visit, we want to enjoy public space, then we just simply don't continue to pack our roads with our cars. David Engwick, a wonderful colleague from Brisbane, Australia, perhaps says it best and most succinctly. David tells us that the reason we invented our cities was as an invention to maximize our exchanges, exchange of goods, services, and products, so we could earn money and buy other people's services. But the other exchanges are equally important, if not even more so, and that's to exchange our culture, our friendship, our ideas, and our knowledge. And if we're to do this well, then we must minimize our travel, not maximize it. And that's what we've been doing over the years. We've been finding every way possible to spread things out so far that we spend many, many hours a week in our cars when we would prefer not to. Can you see if we can focus that slide just a little bit? It's just a little soft, and I think if we do that, then it's going to be okay. Yeah, that's nice. Okay. So whether we start with South Street in Philadelphia, yeah, go ahead and focus the other one a little bit, which is Society Hill, Philadelphia, and that's where, of course, folks like Franklin, Washington framed our democracy. The street hasn't changed to this day. It's still an excellent street. Does all the things that it must do to perform. About 3.5 years ago, a wonderful book came out on the Great Streets by Alan Jacobs. It so motivated me that I immediately bought a set of airline tickets. My wife and I flew over to Spain to discover Barcelona. My mentor, Ramon Trias, had been telling me for years that that was the city I must understand and appreciate if I were to understand what walkable communities is all about. When I got to Barcelona and Madrid, I had all of the wonderful discoveries that I challenge you to make if you haven't been there. But something very interesting happened. As we were preparing to leave Madrid to head down to Barcelona, the wonderful people of Spain would say to me, "Where are you going next?" And we would say, "Ah, we are going to Barcelona." And their comment would be, "Barcelona, that is a most beautiful city, but we, Madrid, are more beautiful." I got to Barcelona, and in time people would say, "Well, where did you come from?" And we would say, "We came from Madrid." And they would say, "Oh, Madrid, that is a beautiful city, but we are more beautiful." And I hope that that's the kind of a challenge in the quest that Redmond, Kirkland, Bellevue, and the other communities make among themselves. That you hold some type of a periodic review to see if you can be the most beautiful city and place to raise a family anywhere in the area. We can make our comparisons almost anywhere. Both of these scenes are of Key West. The image on the left is Old Town. It's built a long, long time ago. It's got narrow streets, short blocks, beautiful buildings, and great plazas. The rest of Key West doesn't look that good. It's like the scene on the right. And it's a lack of ownership, a lack of stakeholders working together. The seawall, which was built during the Depression, is now falling into ruin. The street doesn't drain. The opening week, January 1995, there are 3 motor vehicle crashes. Each one took a human life. 2 were pedestrians. 1 was a bicyclist. So what is it about our generation? During the last 50 years, several generations of folks, where we no longer are able to collaborate and draw together and build some of the most beautiful roads that one could imagine along a seawall like this. Well, that's what we must find out if we're going to achieve the greatness of our country. We have to understand, though, what we're missing if we're going to go ahead and start to rebuild. McDonald's would have us believe, if you look at the sign on your left, that we're going to have this most incredible experience at the drive-in window. Is there anyone here who has had an experience at a window you will never forget because it was so good? Instead, I think what we all focus on is that if we build a great neighborhood with a nice little center to it, a downtown, whatever it might be, then we can go in, have danishes, coffee, a whole breakfast, listen to some music in the background, and have the kind of experience that McDonald's would like us to believe that you can achieve through a pane of glass. And we know what these feelings are, because we've all had them. It's a chance to be greeted by a stranger, an opportunity to just kind of kick back and enjoy life, and to be seen. And to be seen not only by others, but to see others. This is the drama of life that we all get to take part in if we have good streets. I can tell a good street from a distance. In fact, I don't have to look and see what's happening with the roadway itself. The scene on the left is Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge. It's moving 6 lanes of traffic, doing it very well. It was just rebuilt. And it's now moving the traffic at an appropriate speed, not too fast and not stagnant. And as a result, you can see the life of the street come back in the edges. The other scene in Kansas City, a wonderful neighborhood, Brookside, a trolley car stop. Everything within walking range of 1/4 mile, the way our trolleys would allow us to create really fine development. And again, we can see that it's working just by looking at the edges. We don't really have to look at the street. If the street's not working, then the edges don't work. As I travel in America, I have learned that the issue is the neighborhood, that we all in unison, and it doesn't matter who we are, every one of us wants traffic not to move fast, not to have a lot of volume of traffic on our street, and not to have a lot of traffic noise. And is there anyone in this room tonight that would rather have something else on the street where you live? And we've never found anyone who does. So we share this in unison. When we see a good street, we understand it. We appreciate it. And it doesn't matter whether it's an old street built in the 1920s, like the one on the left in Palo Alto, or on the right, a brand new neighborhood somewhere in the panhandle of Florida. We know what qualifies and allows us to have that wonderful ambiance of a place. There's now a number 2 driving issue in America. And that's to preserve open space, to not take the last of the remaining areas, to make sure we protect them, that we're good stewards of the land, which means we're now going to build more greenways, more trails, and work harder to preserve what is left around where we live. It's going to be very, very important to all of us, and we see these trends gaining incredible strength clear across the land. So let's look at some areas that might not get a good grade card when it comes to walkability. How many people do you see in this scene? Does everybody see one? And would you agree that she's in distress? I went back 3 days later and she was still there. So we need to ask ourselves, well, what is missing? Well, obviously people. But in addition, we don't have any trees. We don't have any sidewalks. We don't have any bike lanes. We don't have any real medians. There are no buildings here. This is the kind of schlock that America has been building for over 50 years. It's wearing out, and it's time to replace it And a lot of communities are doing exactly that. So let's look at a community that is planned on the right screen this time. Crested Butte, Colorado, population 1,600, one of the great discoveries that I was able to make during the last 3 years. Crested Butte was laid out by miners. Miners didn't have a lot of money, but had an incredible amount of common sense. They were going to walk everywhere, so no home would be further out than a reasonable 5-minute walk. There would be an active, vital town center. To this day, because of the protection of wetlands and some forest boundaries, we see Crested Butte works as well as it did when it was in its formative years. But right next to Crested Butte is this town. It's half a mile away. It's called Mount Crested Butte. And it's a place that is reactive planning. Nobody laid this town out, but they took a code book. And if someone came to them and proposed something to be built, they'd check their code book, and if it worked, it got built. And nobody thought about what was in the code book. So you see an entire town made up of people who don't know one another, nowhere to go, and no real connectivity or sensitivity about this being a place. So when the people in Mount Crested Butte want to have a good evening, then they get in the cars, start the engines, drive down to Crested Butte. Now when they get there, let's see what they see. You see Maggie. Maggie comes to work every morning at 8. Typically she'll go home at 5. Maggie has become the official traffic calming device of Crested Butte. And this shows us the sensitivity of a real town, that nobody would ever honk their horn at a dog like Maggie. And no one does. And so this is a sign that someday I think all of us would like to see in our neighborhood that any dog could lie in the street and nobody would intrude on the peace of a dog who's setting the tone for place. For place.